I don't know if I've told you all, as we've been going through this series, conflict. I really hate conflict. I grew up hating conflict. I'm a runner. I flee from it. I was the peacemaker. I never wanted, and I would like visibly shake when I was in a confrontation or a difficult situation with another person. The problem is I became a pastor. And as a pastor, you learn you have to be emotionally intelligent and capable of having difficult situations when they arise. You see, there is some conflict that you can't run from. It can't be ignored. You can't simply cover it by love, but it must be confronted. And as a pastor, sometimes that is my job. I have had moments, they are such difficult conversations, but they were so important to have. Fortunately, I've grown in the ability to have these conversations, and so I was able to see these situations through. I was able to see that God's way in addressing the conflict is better than the world's way of fight, flight, or freeze. So rather than fleeing from these situations, I learned to graciously confront the situation when I had the parent of one of my teenagers in the youth group who completely, that young lady misconstrued something I was saying, and she thought that I was singling her out because I said, you know, if you are out partying one night and you know you shouldn't be, well, she thought that I found out that she'd gotten caught partying on Friday night. She went and told her dad that I was singling her out and embarrassing her. And her dad was very angry and let my boss know that. And so I knew I had some cleanup to do. And so I invited this dad out to lunch to clarify and let him understand I would never single out your daughter. I was using the very typical situations that I know teenagers fall into. We clarified the miscommunication, and we were able to bring some reconciliation to that situation. I had another friend who once was upset with me, and I didn't even know why. I just knew the relationship was tense and weird. And so, again, I invited that person to lunch. I found I like to eat my feelings, so if I invite you to lunch, maybe there's conflict. At the end of the conversation, though, we're able to recognize there were some small simmering things, but nothing really big. Again, it was maybe a case of assuming the worst about the situation, dealing with it, addressing it, moving forward. I had another individual, a youth leader in my youth group, who moved in with his girlfriend before they were married. And I had to say, look, we're working with teenagers who are regularly going to be deal with this temptation of moving in with their boyfriend or girlfriend when they go off to college. We can't have this. And so I'm going to need you to step down from being a youth leader. And he understood. And then a few weeks later, he left the church. So sometimes you have conflict and you want to reconcile and you don't end up exactly where you wanted to be. But at the same time, you don't know if you don't try to move forward God's way. And what I've learned is that confrontation is really hard, but it is also healing, or at least it is clarifying. It doesn't always get to the final restoration state you hope for, but it at least brings clarity to the simmering conflict between you and another person. Having that difficult conversation, nobody wants to have that conversation, but it can be healing. And so far as we've been going through this series, I've been teaching about how to deal with conflict from one side of the equation, from the side you can control, yourself. You can't control the other person, but you can do a lot of work on yourself. And so we started out by talking about what not to do. And we said, don't assume the worst, because that can sometimes create conflict out of thin air. And don't be easily offended, because it's possible that you are creating mountains out of molehills. And so there are some conflicts, low-lying things that you need to just step over and say, yeah, they said that, and that was mildly offensive, but they weren't trying to hurt me. It's okay. I don't need to hold this against them. And finally, don't join the fight. I said last week, it takes two to fight. But if you don't join in, you starve that conflict of the oxygen it needs to burn, and eventually it'll just simmer out. And so don't assume the worst. Don't be easily offended, and don't join the fight. Instead, I gave you some choices that you need to make that are going to help. The first is choose to love. It only takes one person to love. You can choose to love that person. We saw that verse. Love covers a multitude of sins. So when you have a heart filled with love, it is easier for you to overlook those smaller offenses. You need to choose to apologize. Examine the part you played in the conflict and be willing to make it right. Go and say, I am sorry. I screwed up. The sooner and quicker you are to apologize, the sooner the conflict will be resolved, hopefully. And finally, choose to forgive. Release the debt that that person owes you for how they wronged you, whether they asked for it or not. Forgiveness is not about releasing that person for their benefit. Sometimes they don't care that you're upset with them. Releasing the person from the debt is for your benefit. So learn to forgive whether they ask for it or not. And here's the good news. You can do all of these steps regardless of the other person's willingness to try to resolve this conflict. Whether they want to or they're just being a booger and they're set in their ways and they're stubborn, you can do all of this for yourself. These are the grace-filled ways that you can prevent and deal with conflict God's way. But sometimes, even if you follow all these steps, it simply isn't enough. Like I already said, sometimes the person you are in conflict with will need to be confronted. And so that's what we are going to unpack in our message today. In dealing with the conflict, when forgiveness and love aren't enough, but the conversation needs to be had with the other person. And before we look at how to confront somebody with grace, we need to address the false belief that many people hold about Christians, and that is that we are to be doormats. Jesus taught to turn the other cheek, correct? He did. But as a result, people think that that means that we should never speak up. We should never say what is on our mind. We should never challenge somebody for doing wrong. Judge not, lest ye be judged. Like, so people say, well, you just need to sit there quietly and never push back at all. That is not biblical. Confrontation is actually a biblical principle if done God's way. There are a few situations in the Bible that we see where strong men confront. Jesus is surrounded by the Pharisees, and he begins his famous woe passage in Matthew 23. Woe to you hypocrites! He's challenging the sin, the deep-rooted sin in their lives that is keeping them at arm's length from God, the God that they want to serve. Then, 3 days before, two days before he is crucified, he flips the tables in the temple, and he says, my Father's house shall be known as a house of prayer. You've turned it into a den of thieves. The people were using some weird situation where they're trading money for animals and gouging the Jews who were coming simply to make their regular offerings at the temple during the high priestly festivals. And they're, you know, having to pay ridiculous amounts of money to be able to make these offerings. And Jesus was saying, this situation is wrong. And he was confronting the sin at the heart of it. Finally, Paul confronted Peter in the book of Acts. Peter was going along with Paul and they were doing ministry, but when the righteous Jews showed up, all of a sudden Peter refused to sit at the lunch table with the Gentiles because he didn't want them to think, you know, that he was no longer as religious as these Judaizers who had come. And Paul said, Peter, what's wrong with you? You'd sit and eat with the Gentiles before. Just because they showed up doesn't mean that you should change your ways. And these are strong conflicts that we see in the Bible by men that we know God worked through. These aren't situations of sin. These are situations of God-ordained conflict. And we have to recognize it's not the norm. If you're having confrontation every day of your life, perhaps you're overdoing it, and you need to learn some of the prevention strategies here along the way. But also, we need to understand it's not wrong. It's not sinful. There are times that as Christians, we need to stand up and speak. And so we need to understand confrontation isn't bad. It is biblical and can actually be a blessing. Proverbs 27, verse 5 through 6 says, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." Basically, confrontation by a friend is can be trusted and is helpful. It's for your benefit. But you need to watch out for those people who tell you everything is good, and meanwhile, they're lying about you behind your back. Those are your enemies. People willing to speak hard truth to you are friends who have your best interests in mind. Jumping to the New Testament in James 5, verse 20, it says, "Remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of their way will save them from death and cover over a multitude of sins." God's telling you the importance of stepping in and trying to turn somebody from their sinful ways. It's huge in their life. It's a blessing to them. It's healing for them. Don't be afraid to do it, thinking, oh, this might offend them. If done properly, God's saying, this is incredibly important. It will cover over a multitude of sins. So in both these verses, we see confronting people in sinful situations is a blessing to them. Don't be afraid to do it. Yes, it's hard, but have the courage to step in graciously. So now that we've looked at what we should do, and that there are moments that we have to step in, that forgiveness and overlooking offense simply isn't enough, when the depth of the hurt or perhaps the repeated nature of the sin actually requires you to step in and say something, how do we do that? First, you need to walk through, I believe, a simple checklist to prepare yourself before having the conversation. Prepare your heart, because a poorly had conversation, if you don't think about it ahead of time, it can go sideways, and you can end up just yelling at each other and making things worse. So first, is there a chance that what you have to say will actually be received? And you know what I mean. There are some people you know are so bullheaded and so stuck in their ways that they are 100% right, and you've already had the conversation with them before, and it always turns into a fight that you need to say, you know what? I simply don't think they're ready for us to actually have an honest conversation about the conflict. And so you need to wait. And that's hard, but that's wisdom. Proverbs tells us there are times where you need to use wisdom to discern the right thing to say. In Proverbs 26, verses 4 through 5, we've got this seemingly strange contradiction. It says, "Don't answer the foolish arguments of fools, or you will become as foolish as they are." And the next verse, "Be sure to answer the foolish arguments of fools." That's exactly the opposite. "Or they will become wise in their own estimation." Proverbs is saying, look, there are times that life is gray, and you have to be able to determine, is this a time where I should speak into that person's life and answer their foolish arguments, or is this a time where I shouldn't because it's just going to be met with more foolishness and I'm going to be drawn in? Sometimes it's not the right time. And in those cases, one really helpful alternative is to simply write a letter that you know you may never send. But it allows you to get your thoughts and your emotions out of your mind and out of your heart and onto the page. And it can be healing. Sometimes somebody hurt you so long ago, they have since deceased. But you realize you have this issue with them still in your heart that you haven't let go. And the most healing thing you can do in those situations is write a letter. You know you're never going to be able to deliver it. They're not going to be able to receive your words, but that doesn't mean that you can't take a step to try to move through your pain and find some level of reconciliation in your own heart between you and God and that situation or maybe what they've done to you. So the next question in the checklist we need to ask ourselves is, have you examined yourself? And we already touched on this last week, but I think it's worth repeating. Before you confront somebody about how they have sinned against you, you have to examine yourself. Jesus taught this in Matthew 7, verses 3 and 5, where he said, "And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? Hypocrite! First get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye." The conversation that you are planning to have is guaranteed to fall flat on its face if you have done a lot to make the situation worse, but you are unwilling to apologize. If all you do is step in and say, "You did this and you did this and that's why I did this," they're instantly going to get defensive, build a wall, and not hear anything you have to say. You have to pull the log out of your own eye first. You have to be willing to apologize. If you're not willing to apologize when you go into that conversation, then don't have the conversation because you're probably just going to make it worse. The third question, can you offer grace and truth? How you approach the conversation, your attitude, and the points you plan to make are going to be critical as to how this confrontation goes. If you're being judgy and you're leading them to feel condemned, then they're not going to hear a word that you have to say. Additionally, if you're embellishing or you're using hearsay to try to add to how bad they are, they're going to say none of that's true, and you're not going to get to any kind of resolve. You have to be willing to speak truth. Ephesians 4:15 says, "Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ." That means if you speak hard truths to other people in this church out of love because you want what's best for them to mature and become more like Jesus Christ, which should be all of our goals, then that makes a huge difference. That is a blessing in their life. But you have to do that in love. The truth can't be, "You're doing this all wrong, and how do you not know that this is sin?" You have to be able to speak the truth in love. But you also have to speak truth. You have to say what is appropriate with facts and with observable things, not what somebody else told you, not gossip, not trying to make it seem bigger than it really was. What's really interesting when you look at the Jesus confrontation with the Pharisees in Matthew 23, when he says, "Woe to you," 7 times, he uses facts. He says, "You tithe on your mint and your dill. You swear on the gold on the altar, but not this." And he tells them, "You do this, and you do this, and you do this." And he's very factual about the actual ways that they are being hypocrites, so much so that they can't really argue back with him. He's speaking truth and in love because he wants them to turn from their wicked ways. But finally, we have to have that truth and grace balance. In Galatians chapter 6, it says, "Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently." This word "gently" is important. You don't confront them in anger, demeaning them, or scolding them. Instead, you have to speak to them as somebody trying to help, somebody trying to fix the relationship, somebody who cares about restoration. And that restoration leads us to the final question. What's your goal? Is your goal restoration? Because going back to that Galatians verse we were just in, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Okay? The goal must be to restore the relationship between you and them, between them and God. That's the key. in that verse. It can't be retaliation. It can't be trying to do the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, Old Testament style. That's not what our job is. We're called to be peacemakers. And so if you're not seeking to make peace, then maybe you're not, your heart's not in a place where you're ready to have that difficult conversation yet. So, now that we have gone through this little checklist and we've prepared our hearts, you're ready to have a difficult and hopefully healing conversation. Fortunately, Jesus taught us exactly what steps to take when it's actually time to confront another person who has sinned against you. And this teaching is found in Matthew chapter 18. Okay, so Matthew chapter 18 is a very famous passage used in churches. This is our process for how we deal with conflict within the church and its wisdom for using outside of the church. If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. Let's stop right there. Just between the two of you. The problem is, some people like to tell a whole lot of other people to get the masses on their side before they go and talk to the person who wronged them. Or they say, well, I'm just seeking wise counsel. It's one thing to go to a wise, trusted friend and say, how would you deal with this situation if this happened? That's one thing. It's another to tell 20 people how that person has wronged you. That's gossip. That's not wisdom. The best way to deal with conflict, to have that confrontation, is to nip it in the bud one-on-one as soon as you can, okay? Directly dealing with it. Next verse, the back half of this. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. So in that point, the second step is bring a witness with you. Bring a witness. If they don't repent when you first speak to them, the plan is that you go and bring a second person along. And this person needs to be somebody with firsthand knowledge of the situation. You're not just bringing your best friend to be your moral support. Okay? You're not just bringing your mom who's like, yeah, you know, in a marital spat, have your mom show up and be like, you're being mean to my baby. That doesn't help. This person who comes along, this witness, is their role is to verify the facts, provide accountability for both parties, and help mediate the conversation with some level of objectivity. Okay? That's why it's important to have another person come along. Moving to verse 17. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. You should jump like three slides. Yep. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. So go to the church. That is step three. Go to the next slide, please. In this process of confronting God's way. First, we discuss directly with the person. Second, we bring a witness. Third, we go to the church. This does not mean we're going to have open mic night at the church and somebody's going to stand up and be like, you know what? Sweet little Alberta stole my cake recipe and she's using it for her own and I need y'all to know it. Like, we don't do that. Don't hear this verse and be like, oh, what kind of a church is this? But there is a level where bring it to the church where I've seen it practiced well is if there are two of you who have a conflict and you can't seem to get it resolved, coming to the elder board at a meeting with the elders and allowing a group of wise counsel, spiritually mature men to help try to find some common understanding can be very helpful in a dispute where two people can't seem to find common ground. Unfortunately, what I've seen oftentimes is if one person has been unrepentant of their faults and flaws in this whole situation up to this point, often going in front of the elders and talking through it doesn't change their minds. But that's God's point in what we are supposed to do. And the fourth point is where this verse takes us and ends. Is that, and if they refuse to listen, even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Essentially, treat them like a stranger. Some people think this means that you may be cut off all ties from them. You have the right to hate that person and be done speaking to them forever. But that's not what it means. Remember, Jesus sat down and shared meals with tax collectors. So if he's saying treat them like a tax collector, but yet he's willing to sit down and eat with a tax collector, we have to wrestle with what that means. It means maybe, yes, you can keep them at arm's length. You set up safe boundaries to keep them from hurting you. But you don't close the door on the opportunity that maybe you two could reconcile at some point in the future. You don't want to shut it so tight that there's no future where you two can restore that relationship. But you do set up safe boundaries. Now, obviously, this section about bringing the person to the church only applies to people who are in the same church. Like, it would be weird if you had an argument with your next-door neighbor and you're like, come to my church with me. We need to go talk to my elders. I think at that point, it's okay to have a mediator, maybe bring in a third person who knows both of you and what's going on. That's wisdom. If you get to that point and you can't find resolve, I think it's safe to just jump to the fourth step here and just say, okay, I've got to put some boundaries here between you and I so that you don't hurt me in this way again. So that's how Jesus teaches us to deal with conflict, to confront when it's beyond just forgiveness and overlooking offense with love. Instead, we follow Christ's model, where he confronted and he forgave. Christ models confrontation and forgiveness. He confronted the Pharisees. He cleansed the temples and he called out sin. Yet he also forgave Peter and had a hard conversation with Peter after he denied Jesus three times. He met the woman at the well and he called out her sin of having been married five times and living with a sixth man. And yet he offered her forgiveness and the eternal water of life. When we follow Jesus' example, we learn that confrontation isn't about winning or being right. It's about loving people enough to speak to them the truth while also extending them grace. These conversations are going to be hard, but if your goal is truly reconciliation and restoration, then they can be healing and they honor God and strengthen your relationship with that person in the future. So over these last 3 weeks, we've equipped you with God's tools for handling conflict. In the first week, we learned to forgive, to release the debt that others have owe us. Because God has already released our debt. And last week, in the second week of this series, we learned to choose love, to choose to overlook others' offense. And today we've learned to confront graciously, following Jesus' steps to pursue reconciliation when forgiveness and love alone are not enough. And here's my challenge for you this week. If there is still somebody in your life that you have conflict with that you have not addressed, don't let another week go by. Pray about it. Ask God to help you to forgive that person and release that sin. Or maybe you need to say, Jesus, simply fill me with enough love. I'm being offended by all these small things, and I know they're small. Help me to step over these and to just love people well instead of making big things out of seemingly small things. Or maybe you have a difficult conversation that you've been avoiding for a long time and it's time to have the conversation. Yes, confrontation should be few and far between how often you have these conversations, but maybe there's one that you've been avoiding for a long time. Go through this checklist in your head. Prepare your heart. Say, God, is this the time? And try to put this conflict to bed. God doesn't want you living in a constant state of rub with other people. He wants us to experience his joy and his peace. He wants you to be a peacemaker. And so what that means is those of us who are following Jesus need to be the ones who take the initiative to bring peace and reconciliation even into these situations. And remember this, you don't do any of this in your own strength. The same God who forgave you extravagantly and who loves you unconditionally, who confronted your sins to rescue you when he died on the cross, he is with you by the power of his Holy Spirit, who is going to give you the words to speak, the grace to extend, and the courage that you need. So go, confront if necessary, forgive freely, choose love courageously, and trust God with all the results. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?